This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Michelle Norris. Public health officials meeting at the Institute of Medicine in Washington today say SARS will almost surely return this fall. Where it will show up or how widely it will spread, nobody can predict. One of the biggest worries is that SARS, or another unknown microbe, could hit one of the sprawling cities of the developing world, places where housing is crowded and sanitation is poor. Not only could a disease like SARS spread quickly in these conditions, an epidemic could quickly go global.
Today we present the second report in our series on the lessons learned from SARS. NPR's Brenda Wilson traveled to Lagos, Nigeria, the second largest city in Africa. Malaria, hepatitis, HIV, and other infectious diseases are already rampant there. Lagos was spared from SARS, but technology and governance haven't kept pace with a massive migration of people into the city.
Lagos, Nigeria has all the vigor of a frontier and the chaos. Everybody is practically a government unto themselves. They dispose of their own trash in the muddy ditch beside the market, provide their own electricity. Whole streets give way to shop after shop of stack on top of stack of generators. And car horns are just about the only traffic signal. Some have carved out walled spaces of middle-class comfort among the endless small shops, markets, and aging blackened buildings.
Everybody comes to Lagos. Lagos is where God is.
Dr. Leke Pitan is the Honorable Commissioner for Health for Lagos State, whose principal city is Lagos.
Every part of Nigeria is in Lagos. Every part, every single village in Nigeria has somebody in Lagos. And they keep coming in at the rate of about 3,000 every day to stay.
Estimates of the population of Lagos range from 13 to 15 million people. Whole families reside in one-room flats. The flats, they call them Face Me, I Face You, can house as many as seven people. Pitan says such conditions contribute to health problems, put a demand on public services. So there's a five-floor walk up to the health commissioner's office because the elevator's out of service.
The lights just went out.
Pitan and Laide Shakunbi, a journalist, provide the first lesson in a developing country's infrastructure.
The light may not come back for the next 2-3 hours. That's the honest truth.
Really?
Oh, yes.
You're saying this is out for a while.
It's typical to have outages that last 6 hours. In some areas, they may not even have power supply for days.
For days.
It used to be months.
Months.
It's improving slightly now.
And this affects the hospitals as well.
Right. It does. The generators are overflogged, and many times they break down. And considering the fact that we run free health services, sometimes the hospital system of management is unable to quickly repair that generator. So you find that healthcare management with our epileptic infrastructure is a nightmare, really.
Just trying to draw up the department's budget. There's the electricity bill and the cost of fuel and generators. Even when they have electricity, most of Lagos's 16 hospitals function at a rudimentary level, without the diagnostic instruments modern hospitals depend on. There are no CAT scans, ultrasounds, endoscopes, pulse oximeters.
But honestly, one would have preferred a situation where infrastructure, like electricity and water, get a situation where we can take them for granted. But we are nowhere near. We are nowhere near.
In Nigeria, in part, it's a consequence of the move toward privatization. The electric authority, the telecommunications companies, the doctors, operate where it's worth their while. And when it isn't, either the government steps in, or as more often happens, people do without. There are shortages of doctors and nurses, one doctor to 5,000 people. By comparison, in the U.S., there's one doctor to 300 people. Dr. Jide Idris, the permanent secretary for health of Lagos State, counts himself a lucky man that the SARS outbreak, which hit China and Toronto, never landed in Lagos.
We were able to muster enough people to be able to at least do some control measures at the airport, restricting movements and screening people. But if you had gotten a case, there's no way we would have been able to investigate in terms of laboratory work because we don't have the means to do that. Even in the whole country, I think you only have two laboratories that can deal with that effectively.
The lack of infrastructure in Nigeria and Lagos can be traced to 30 years of on-again, off-again military rule. when healthcare was underfunded, ill-managed, and hospitals and equipment weren't upgraded. Democracy is on again. President Olusegun Obasanjo was just re-elected after 4 years, and there has been a small increase in the health budget. But Idris says there hasn't been enough time to undo years of neglect, and that neglect has had dire consequences.
To start correcting things is going to take a long time. I'll give an example. One of our hospitals there, the drainage system for that hospital was leading nowhere. I mean, and to correct that requires a lot of money.
You're saying the drainage system, it was just backing up?
I mean, you had gutters here and there, but they don't lead anywhere. They're just blocked.
That's for drainage for sewage, or drainage for hospital waste, or drainage for what?
Sewage, water, rainwater, what have you.
Left uncorrected, the backed up sewage and rainwater become a breeding ground for mosquitoes, contributing to one of Nigeria's most deadly infectious diseases, malaria. It could also become a pathway for other infections, including SARS, whose spread the World Health Organization has now traced, in some cases, to defective plumbing. At Lagos Island General Hospital, the drainage system works fine, but the 100-year-old facility, which has stretched out and built upwards, is showing wear. And so Annie Marsham, a lawyer, and a group of private citizens are meeting in the administrator's office to talk about raising money for the hospital.
My sister was treated here. She died in the end. It was unfortunate, but she got excellent service. And the doctors here, professionally, are the best in the country, but they have a number of constraints.
Marsham's sister died of liver cancer, a condition often caused by untreated hepatitis. The World Health Organization estimates that 2 billion people worldwide, mainly in developing countries, are infected with hepatitis B or C, often at birth, but also through unprotected sex, unsafe needles, and exposure to contaminated blood. It's at the top of the list of diseases that Dr. Shumway in the emergency room really worries about.
The fear of all the viruses, particularly hepatitis, which is even far more dangerous than SARS.
There are 5 patients on drips and 1 receiving a blood transfusion in the bare emergency room bay just off the corridor, where about 30 other patients are waiting. None of the doctors or nurses are wearing gloves or dressing gowns. But Dr. Shumway insists they screen patients carefully and isolate those with communicable infections.
All medical staff look out for something suspicious. If you get the same pattern of illness in 2-3 people, you start asking yourself, that why is this happening now?
Have you ever had anything suspicious?
Not that I know of.
what happened?
It's motor accident. Out of the 22, I'm the only person that has survived there.
In a walk around Lagos Island General Hospital, its administrator, Dr. Olufemilajo Olatunji, a hematologist, keeps coming back to the danger to people in Nigeria from hepatitis, particularly to health workers, which means that even patients such as this one pose a potential health risk.
That is why we try to encourage all our staff, at least before they attend to any patient, that they have to put on their gloves and they have to be careful in handling of the injections, especially when they have to inject, to give injections to patients. Okay. They need to take the universal precautionary measures with all patients and treat all patients as if they are infected.
Nigeria's health system also relies on blood that has been purchased from private laboratories and hospitals, which they have in turn purchased from people who sell their blood.
My biggest worry now is actually transmission of HIV through blood in Nigeria. That's my biggest worry, because people transfuse carelessly. And one thing you can never be sure of in a situation like ours is you can never be sure of the safety of that blood.
You're not worried about somebody walking in from the jungle with Ebola? You know, that's what Americans always obsess about.
Well, it's worth thinking about. Actually, but sometimes you really want to confine yourself as at this point in time to what your problems are.
So while the West frets over outbreaks of such deadly diseases as SARS,
I'm certain that if we do have, like we've had, Lassa fever And acute viral infections like that in the past, we've been able to contain it by isolation.
Dr. Babatunde Oshodeme doesn't entirely dismiss the threat of Nigeria becoming the jumping-off point for global outbreak. Lassa fever, after all, is named after Lassa, a town in Nigeria. But as the AIDS director, Oshodeme is more worried about a growing epidemic that already infects 3.5 million people in Nigeria.
We do think about that because the template is there for all the things to come and express itself. Poverty, which is a big issue, undernutrition, and the environment in itself, they're there. So if we do get infectious disease of any sort, we can have, yes, we can, it's possible. And given what we have now on the ground in terms of HIV, it even makes it worse.
Ultimately, Oshodeme says public health is linked to human development. And Africa, not just Nigeria, needs help in dealing with the conditions that foster disease. First and foremost, debt relief on payments to international lending institutions. But so far, he says, he has only seen tokenism on the part of the West. His challenge is to explain why anyone in North Dakota should care.
Because it is the right thing to do. Now, if you're looking at the issues of public health, you could actually carry Ebola from here to that place in 9 hours, or even more, maybe 12 hours away. That's the first thing. On a long-term basis, the continuous pressure that the West gets about people from the South moving to the North, seeking greener pastures and seeking to have a better life, will be stemmed if they actually have a good life of their own. And what they're looking for is not a lot. You know, most people here will survive with less than $5, and they'll be very happy. And if we truly believe that we are gradually working towards a global village and that people must respect each other, then there has to be equity in the way we deal with ourselves.
In Dr. Babatunde Oshodeme's mind, if rich countries are really threatened by the prospect of diseases from the developing world, they will work with countries like Nigeria to help them offer their people more than they do now. Brenda Wilson, NPR News.